This is Game On. With your host, Zeke Williams.
Game On!
Back at you on a Tuesday, feeling good. 3 o'clock standing tall, rocking the streets of Vegas. Ari's got the wheels of steel. We've got a little dope coming up at 3:27. We're going to Oaktown. Ed Graney from the Review Journal and also ESPN 1100. Yes, we're going to get him on the press box. But, folks, you look outside like yesterday, we just making it rain! Oh, yeah.
Did you do this?
Nothing like it.
Nothing like it.
Love it when it rains in the valley, man. Except in traffic. I mean, I'm in Henderson, moving, taking care of things, and I saw so many accidents. It's like, where are we, in Tijuana?
Man, it is. Oh, it's rough out there.
Is this China? What the hell? It ain't rough out there, man. You just need to know how to drive.
I know how to drive, but nobody else seems to, yeah. So.
Blame it on the other guy. Mm-hmm. All right, plenty to get to, and of course, the game last night. Boy, did I get lucky. Besides me having the over, needing overtime to win it, what a fascinating game. We get back-to-back good ones like that from the Bulldogs, but they can't win the one they really needed to win after taking out Oklahoma in double overtime last weekend or last Monday. They come back a week later, they go to overtime again and can't get it done. We'll get all to that, the highlights, what Tebow had to say, Tua's interview on the field, Saban and his presser this morning. We got all those clips, but we have to go up to Oakland right now and go back to what took place with Chucky, the $100 million man, the new head coach for the Raiders, John Gruden. And he was introduced today, $100 million for 10 years. Some of the things he had to say about Raider Nation and becoming the Raiders head coach again. Gruden, no cuts. Okay, let's move on to the game. All right, to the game. Let's jump it now. I'm watching this ball game. The first half, 13-0. The game goes down at halftime, and I'm thinking, man, we got to have a lot better than this. This is not acceptable for the championship game. We saw this movie already back when LSU and Bama took on each other, right? Okay, we saw Bama and LSU play to whatever the score was. It was like 12 to whatever, 9 to nothing, I believe, whatever the score was. And then we move back up front, and then they have another lousy game where there's no touchdowns. And I'm thinking, it's 13 to nothing halftime, and I'm not thinking about my bet. I'm thinking about, I want a compelling finish to the game. I want what we don't know, some drama. Give us some suspense. Well, the suspense was the fact that Nick Saban decided to put that freshman in there, Tua, straight out of high school, straight out of Hawaii. Okay, so you got two freshman quarterbacks now on the field. And I got to tell you, when you give it a thought, you have someone who has played and he hasn't really taken a significant snap all year long. This is the last 30 minutes of the season. And the first thing I thought when I saw Tua come in to start the second half is, okay, they're pretty desperate. This is straight up desperation, but you got to do something, right? You have to do something. So they put him in. He gets it done. He scrambles. He's a southpaw. So now, even though Smart on the other end with Georgia knows what's going on, they don't really have any film on him. Well, you're going to study the film of the high school kid the week that you have a shortened week. You got 6 days to get this right. So we got 6 days to get this right. How much are we going to look at Tua? No, we're going to be watching Hurts. We want to see anything about him that we could take him out of to make him uncomfortable. Make him beat us, all right? Stop the run game, make Hurts beat us, and he couldn't. He couldn't put a point up. He could barely make completions. And then every time they tried to run him from a quarterback keeper, it's a situation where from the quarterback keeper, they had it stopped. He had one good run. That was it. He was not going to win that ball game. And I'll give Nick Saban credit for that. Him and his staffers, when they got in the halftime, they knew that Hurts was not going to win the game. We cannot win the ball game with this guy at quarterback. We need to pass the football. Okay? And that's what they did to get on to get the victory. Now, Nick Saban today, in his press conference, he talked about the resiliency of his team and how they got the victory.
You know, sometimes you win the game, but you don't necessarily beat the other team. And I think that we won the game last night because of our resilience, because of our belief in the system, trust and respect for each other, and just really being sort of resilient to whatever happened in the game, and being pretty relentless in terms of the competitive spirit that our players played with. I think Tua certainly gave us a spark in the second half offensively, and I think that was something that helped us on defense, as well as to put some points on the board to give us a chance to win the game. So this has been a wonderful experience for us. This will be a game that I'll never forget. You know, just the ending itself. I think you forget that we scored on fourth down, missed a field goal to win, and then got sacked before we made a big play to win the game. So there was a lot of things that happened that were critical moments in the game that really, really pleased with the way our players responded each and every time they had a circumstance that seemed like it might be very difficult to overcome.
You know, I am a Nick Saban fan, all right? I had the privilege back in the old day of the Gridlock show with Paulie and Mitch, where Paulie and I, we hit all these different NFL camps. We went to the Cowboys camp in Cali. We went to Phoenix's camp. We did Jacksonville, Tampa, Miami, and who am I missing? I think there was one more team. Cardinals, if I didn't say them already. Nevertheless, when we went into Miami, that's when That's when Saban was the head coach. Smart was his defensive coordinator. So, yeah, they were there at the time. And that was the time the question was posed, are you leaving to go back to college? No, not going to happen. Next year he's gone. He's in Bama. So, yeah, we made that trip, had a chance to get down there and see him. Look, even though he moved, you're leaving an NFL team. You're not leaving a cupboard bare in the NFL because these are millionaires getting paid. They have a depth chart. They have three deep, at least two in every position. And then, of course, the special teams, you move it down, they've got the personnel. It's not like college football where you have a responsibility for guys that aren't getting paid, at least that we know of, on the surface. You have to recruit. You have to make sure their grades are right. You have to make sure you have decent kids in your program. You're looking at 90 kids or however many kids are on that roster as opposed to the pros where, you know, you don't have to babysit. If you don't have control of your locker room in the NFL, it's one thing, but you don't have to babysit your players because they're millionaires. If they're not responsible enough, then that's on them. Cut them, move on, okay? You get your money up front in the NFL, and if you're a jerk and you don't know how to act and you break the team rules, you violate anything, you're gone. College is different. College, you don't really want to see a kid screw his life up before he has a chance to make a life for himself. So you're kind of like a babysitter. You really are. You're a mentor. You're a tutor. You're a father figure. You're all that, and you're the head coach. So you and your staff, you have to get it, and you have to get it right. If Saban were to leave Alabama tomorrow, I'm good with it. Are you? Maybe not Tide Nation. However, how could you be mad at him? What, five titles? I mean, he's raking it through. He gets it. He's the best recruiter in the country, him and his staff, and his disciples are 0-12 against him on the field. So he is the almighty when it comes to college football, being a head coach. He does it all. He does it properly. I'm a fan of his. A lot of people don't like him. I think back to when he was doing those promos on ESPN, and he's eating a cookie in this promo, and the cookie falls on the ground, and he's talking. He picks it up and keeps eating it while he's talking. Okay, that's the kind of guy I want to see. All right, he's going to have some fun with you on that. So you could tell he was stressing. And, you know, you can't do anything but give it to your coordinators. And he's yelling at them when things don't work out properly. And that's what you do. Well, here's a guy that played against him back in the 2000 era. You may know him. He won the Heisman a couple of years. His name is Tim Tebow. Tebow was on First Take this morning, and he talked about how difficult the task is playing against a Nick Saban coach team.
I played against Nick Saban. I've game planned against Nick Saban. It is one of the hardest things I have done in my life to beat a Nick Saban coach football team. Listen, I got to play against Bill Belichick and so many of the best defensive minds. And there is not a brighter defensive mind than Nick Saban in the game. It's one reason he was able to get Alabama to the top, because they didn't have the number one recruiting class in the country when he got there. But because of his schemes and his talent, he was able to get them to the top, specifically defense. Not every coach is able to do everything. He's a defensive-minded coach. Jimbo's an offensive-minded coach. Urban's an offensive-minded coach. But when you talk about defense, Nick Saban is up there with the best in the world and maybe the best of all time as far as defensive minds. So I think you got to give him credit for both. Yes, it's recruiting, but it's also scheme. What he has done on the defensive side of football has changed college football. First of all, you take a look at what they did in 2008, 9, 10, when they had a 3-4, 250-pound middle linebackers that would stop the run. A defensive line would stop the run. His combination coverage would take away any of the air from receivers, and he would make it so stressful to be able to have a passing game. So there was only two things you could really do to have success. It was throw the deep ball, and it was to have a quarterback that would drop back in a pass and run. So for years, the only way to beat Alabama was to have a quarterback play out of his mind and also be super athletic. That was the way to beat Alabama. That's when we talk about out-Alabama-ing Alabama. That was the first time I saw it, was the first half last night, because no one can do it. Because they win at the line of scrimmage, they're able to two-gap, stop the run, and then they're able to take away any of the room from getting an easy rhythm passing game going. So you have to take shots like South Carolina did when they had Alshon Jeffrey, and they just threw it up to him 10 times, and they won the game. Or Ole Miss when they took shot after shot, and they were able to hit four or five of them and have 35 points. Or we did when we were at Florida to have, you know, quarterback run, balance, and then take shots as well. Yeah. So that was the way to beat Alabama.
Great quarterback played for you guys back then. I remember him.
Average. We were working on it. But that was the way to beat them. There was no other way to beat them. And so that's what Georgia, what they did was so impressive. That's how he changed college football. Flat out.
That was Tim Tebow on First Take, and he hit it out the park. The only way you really kind of kill the momentum of what they're doing, and you kind of saw Bama do this with Hurts in that first half. They tried to speed up with a no-huddle offense, right? It's not really their personality. It's not who they are, their MO and all that good stuff. However, if you have a plan like that and you're Alabama, you're a power football team. Your thing is to run first, and then if you want to run the quarterback, fine, but throw if you have to, or only to mix it up. So with that being said, on the other side, your defense isn't really comfortable with a hurry-up offense. That's why Johnny Manziel ran crazy on him at A&M. I mean, he made him dizzy. He was running circles around him. And then, of course, Saban came out later, hey, there should be a rule that, you know, no hurry-up offense in college. Come on, man. What planet are you playing on, Nick? I love him because he'll say something really silly like that, and then he'll come back and win the championship, okay? Fear of losing. Listen, Nick Saban is on the biggest hot seat in all of football, okay? That in Texas, what's a better job than Texas or Alabama, maybe Ohio State, okay? And I'm missing a couple. LSU's, we're seeing, by the way, that's going to Florida State. They're probably in that 1A bracket, but Bama, Ohio State, Texas. Texas is about to come back up. We saw this year, made it to a bowl game and won it. So good for the Longhorns. But the job in the SEC and with the Tide is the biggest in college football. And the pressure on Nick Saban to win it every year. You saw him in that interview when they lost, okay, when they lost that ball game to Auburn. He's like, well, you know, our kids, they deserve a chance. They're good enough. We just lost at this time. In the year, right. It was a bad time to lose. And Bama is the one team and coach and opponent that gets in Nick Saban's head. He's not comfortable playing Auburn. Saban hates it to play Auburn. That's the one team I think he fears more than anything else. And the type of player he fears more than anything else is a Johnny Manziel type, a quarterback on the opposing team that can make your team dizzy and run fits and circles around them. So he's afraid of that. But in the end, he puts together the best team. His linebackers, he had four of them down the majority of the year, and they're still winning football games, okay? He had two good players that were out, one of his linebackers and someone else in this game, and they still struggle, but they make a daring move, the most daring move I've ever seen in game. Okay, I wonder what the bettors did at the books. I did speak with a couple of guys from the books, and I'm looking for some information on that. Hopefully we'll get it during the course of this show. But George Cole, I spoke to him. He's off today, but he said they won a little in that ballgame. So in other words, a lot of people bet Bama on the money line, but they had the under in the game, or Bama tied to the over in the game, rather, so they lost those parlays. The books won on that end. So you make that gamble. You bring Tua in. Smart, on the other hand, he knows about Tua. But they didn't game plan for Tua. They didn't game plan for a southpaw that can run and that can throw the ball. That last pass he threw was 50 yards. He threw a dime. Remember, a lefty, everything is the other way, okay? Your back is not the left tackle. Your back is the right tackle. So the right tackle is the most important guy on the block defending you. If you're a safety, you're looking at a guy and he's looking at you from a different position. You haven't seen him all day. Now you're looking at him from a different position. You're in overtime. After winning the ball game on the field, Tua gives you a great definition of what took place.
Tell me what you saw when you threw the ball to Devontae Smith.
They tried to disguise their cover two. And when I dropped back, I looked the middle safety down. The cover two safety inside on the third receiver coming over. And I just went back outside and Smitty was open. So I took the shot and here we are now.
You got the championship. Tua, congratulations. A wonderful.
That was incredible. That was on ESPN. This is a kid who's, what, 18, 19 at best? Straight out of Hawaii. Straight from the islands, baby. He comes over. And now, I don't know about you folk, but I used to hate homework. How about you, Ari? Did you like it in school?
No, not really. Who does? I want to be done.
Well, if you're a quarterback and you're sitting on the bench and you may play a couple of snaps that don't really even matter the whole year, you better know the playbook. You better know the formations. You better know the checkdowns, the audibles. You better know everything you have to know in that playbook, because they get into the locker room at halftime. Saban and the coaches come over to Tua and they say, okay, you're starting the second half. And we're going to rotate you. They didn't rotate them. They knew that was the right thing to tell them. You don't want your other quarterback, your starter, hurt. You don't want him feeling down, because you may have to go back to him. If the kid gets hurt or if he's just raggedy, then you're going to have to get out there and go back to your starter. The kid showed some promise. But he had to know everything that you practice all year long, and he's never run it. When it mattered, this is the biggest game of his entire life. Ever. Okay? I don't know if he'll ever be in a game bigger than this. But I will say this about his upside and the reports you're hearing about him. He's going to be a Heisman candidate if he sticks around long enough. He's a true freshman. He went to Smith, a true freshman, right? So in the end, when you give it a thought, the homework that a football player has to take in is what this is all about. When I ask you about homework, yeah. I didn't like it. Ari didn't too much care for it. But if you're a football player, especially a quarterback, you better do your homework. You better sleep it. Your girlfriend, everything else that matters other than your homework in your classroom, this better come as high as that. Otherwise, you're going to get out there and you're going to fall on your face. They didn't. They got the victory. All right. Lighter's coming up. Dope is next. However, we're going to leave you with Ari's work highlights from the 26-7 run, which meant 26-3 overtime win for Bama.
Third down right here for Fromm. Delivers under pressure. Downfield. Caught. Hardman. A foot race. Escapes and scores. Fromm again trusted to throw on first down. Batted in the air. Picked off. The Tide respond. Raekwon Davis. It's another big man interception by Bama. And they're at the 40. Now Harris is the fourth tailback, bounces it. Najee Harris in the clear, a powerful run, still battling and slung out inside the 10 by Roquan Smith. Hot Rod just slides it through. Tagovailoa trying to make up for it. Fires to the end zone. Touchdown! Alabama wins!
Man, I've been saving for a special occasion.
Like a quarter pounder, man.
Man, be careful with that, man. Is it heavy stuff, man? Will it blow me away?
It's time now for Man, That Show Is Dope.
3:26 in the valley. Lighters up. Pass it. Going down yonder. Hillbilly country, New Orleans. Not everyone from there's a hillbilly, but it is hillbilly country. Back in the woods, the swamps. Yep. And they have some pretty cute teachers, too. Well, this middle school teacher, she was arrested again yesterday. This is the second time on Snapchat that she sent a different student pictures of her stuff. She was arrested back on November 17th. For sending one of her male students pictures of her stuff, junk, goods, whatever you want to call it. Not good enough, okay? I got to do it to another kid that I like in my class, okay? Now, let me think about it, okay? If I had a kid and a male teacher sent something like that to my daughter, I'd be in jail or dead.
Yep.
He'd have to kill me or I'd kill him. But if I had a son... 13 years of age, and he had a cute teacher.
So wrong.
And I found out that Junior had some slides of her. Hey, listen, let me see those slides, and I won't punish you. It is a double standard, okay? What the hell? Okay, it's wrong what she's doing. But I want to be 13. Here, hey, my hand's raised right here.
Okay.
It's sick. I mean, what? And generally, it's a good-looking teacher. How about the teacher years ago that went to prison, got knocked up by the 12-year-old kid, right? Had the baby in prison. They got out, and I think later they got married. Okay? But if it's a dude, if it's a male teacher, obviously he's the worst person on the planet. But a female good-looking teacher and it's a 13-year-old student, it's wrong. It's wrong. But if it's Junior, give me those slides, kid. And then go out and play some football. Then get your computer and give me some more slides. Okay, I'm joking. Nothing proper about this. But she is going back to jail. There's more information, but the story, all you need to know is she's done it twice on Snapchat. I mean, what the hell?
Well,
how are you wired like that?
That's what I was going to say. There's something has to be said about, and the double standard is a tough one, let's be honest. And I will say that I'm not ever excusing anything, but there's an age. I think when it's like a 16-year-old boy, I'm not saying it's okay, but at least it's a little
this
more.
This guy's 13, but right? Like, I see what you're 13 saying.
13's young, yeah.
16 is,
you
is
at least
legal
at 16,
in some states.
Yeah, and you at least have, you know, the mental capacity to maybe to know a little better what's right or wrong, or to even say, hey, Dad, you know, I'm talking to this really fly girl, but
no.
She happens to be my history
teacher.
But you
teacher. Can't, you can't indulge in anything like that.
Correct.
It's improper.
Correct.
With your student. Okay, her name again is Figueroa Ramos.
Hey.
13-year-old kid on November 17th, and then she did it again yesterday. So they popped her a second time, and I'll tell you what, the big girls in prison are going to have a lot of fun with her.
What's the charge? It's child...
Child...
endangerment? Or?
It's in the story here somewhere, but the story's so damn long, I didn't want to bore you with the rest of it. Yeah. Just want to give you the goods.
She'll
like she gave
again.
That 13-year-old the goods.
Do you understand how Snapchat works, though?
No.
Because that's another thing that confuses me. Snapchat is...
It's a video, right?
It's yeah.
But, so it's not just
pics. But
here's
the key. It's either or, but the key is that you get... they're up for 24 hours. And if... So say I send you a picture of this girl, right?
Yeah.
Hey. Well, you look at it. Nice. And that's it. And then it deletes itself after 24 hours.
Ah.
If you screenshot that picture, I would be notified. So if you send someone something You know, okay, like say you're just talking to a girl, you just send her a face pic, nothing, you know, right. But you don't want anyone else to see it. If she then takes a picture of it on her first, then has it on her phone after that point, you're notified at least. So that way, at least you're not. So it's supposed to be very private and very.
So then you can delete it.
Yeah, I mean, well, once you screenshot it, it then becomes, then it's on your phone, and then it's, then you have
and,
it.
And the feds could come and get anything you delete anytime.
So we joke around and say it's like a cheating app. You know, you talk, you have conversations, they get deleted too, by the way.
Right.
So you could talk to your little, side piece, and no one's going to know because they're all, the snap, it just disappears.
I'm sorry, dude, I ain't doing nothing on a computer.
But
I,
yeah, no, hey, but that's my
not,
point.
So. Yeah, I do not I text game to a girl. I mean, the stalker, my girl finds out.
I understand. I do.
Yeah, what you got?
It's a brave world out there. Mine's a little more.
She's a dope, by the way.
Yeah, mine's a little better. This is good stuff for kids, actually. In Dallas, at Billy Earl Dade's Middle School, they have an event called the Breakfast with Dads event. Students are encouraged to bring fathers, father figures in their lives for breakfast. So, more than 600 men showed up. That right there is dope off the top. But the key is that how that happened is the school became concerned there was only there's 150 students aged 11 to 13 that, quote, may not have a dad to join them for breakfast. And the organizer, named Christina Dove, tapping into the new world that we live in, she went on a Facebook and put up a notice seeking for volunteers. She was hoping to hit 50 was her goal. And she got hundreds of responses just in the first night. And in 4 days, she reached 400 mentors interested in participating. That's how they got to 600 men for it. So they served breakfast. It was an event with some icebreaker activities and stuff like that. One of the volunteers gave each man a tie in effort to teach the students. I just thought that was, the whole thing is dope. The pictures and stuff, there were, there's a little tear stuff, make you want to cry a little bit. It's pretty cool. And she says she hopes to have the mentors who showed up for this maybe continue to work with her, because her actual day job, aside from that, is she's a children's advocate at something called Big Thought, a nonprofit educational organization.
Yeah, you know, you give it a thought. Now, you, Marcus, myself, none of us have kids, okay? But I would have to think and believe that if we did, perhaps we would take care of our kid or kids. But I can't understand why so many different dads are deadbeat dads. I don't know. I don't get it. I never will understand that one. I guess because I'm not a father. So
you know, I say that though, but listen, I am irresponsible about some stuff. You were just asking me about a dog, and I said I don't know if I should have a dog. And you know, fortunately, through good decisions and also, you know, just being responsible, I don't have kids accidentally. But I want to say that I feel like if I had a kid, yeah, I wouldn't want to be a deadbeat. Now, I probably wouldn't be the greatest dad, I'll be honest, financially and other things, and I'm still a kid, and my love life and all that won't reflect on me necessarily being the greatest dad. But what I will not do, exactly what your point is, I might not be great, but I'll be there. And I agree with you. I can't imagine putting a child into the universe.
Can I drop a joke on you here?
You sure can.
You got to get some to have some.
Oh, this guy. help me out, folks.
Come on.
Tell the ladies.
No, that story is dope. He looks like Aaron Rodgers, ladies. He's available.
Yes,
okay?
From the neck
check
up.
Check him. This one took place at the game last night. Our president, Donald Trump, he came down with the soldiers on the field. And he's on the field singing the national anthem, okay? He's singing the national anthem with his hand on his chest on the field. Now, social media just blew up because while he's singing the national anthem, I don't know if he forgot the words or he just got careless and got lazy. But yeah, Donald Trump, come on, you were an entertainer before you took over the Oval Office. You know you are on camera for everything you do. Every move you make, they're watching you. So he's singing the beginning of the national anthem, and then he stops, hands still over the heart. Then he picks up another familiar lyrics, and he stops. And he's doing this throughout the entire two-minute anthem, and he's getting just torched on social media. And you know me, I don't go after Trump on this show, or not enough time. like I said before, once he became president, I'm going to hope that he does well, because if he does well, that means the country's doing well. I'm not going to root against Trump. I'm not a fan of his. However, he got beat up so badly. Now, there were some people that liked him. Quote, Trump being down on the field, walking out with the troops, singing along with the national anthem with such pride is a definition of pro-America. This is our president, wrote that Trump guy. It's another guy. I just witnessed one of the most special things I've ever seen in my 56 years. Almost made me cry. Our wonderful President Trump standing along the color guard, hand on his heart, singing the national, wait a minute, broken sing, national anthem.
Attempting to sing.
At the college championship game, so appreciated as far as I know, tweeted Von Asham. Sounds like a black guy.
What's I was going to say, doesn't sound.
Was his middle name Tom? Oh, I'm sorry. And then Scarborough, the running back for Bama, was seen supposedly in the tunnel because the players went on the field for the anthem.
Correct.
Saying, blank Trump. Blank Trump. So you got to be careful. There's cameras everywhere. But in the end, I thought it was cool that he went on the field. But if you're going to go on the field, you either sing the whole song or you don't sing it at all. You just stand there with pride, with your hand over your heart. When I go to games, Rebel games, wherever I'm at, if an anthem's being sung and you have to stand up, take your hat off, whatever, I don't sing the anthem. I just have myself. I'm standing there, okay? And not hand over the heart, but I'm just standing there respecting the flag. But if you're going to go on the field, you either sing the whole song or you don't sing it at all. So I thought social media was pretty dope about that.
They are always dope. They're always on it, too. They know everything. Forget a camera.
Yep.
You're done. You're on Twitter.
You're it.
It's a wrap. My thing is just, this is just a double standard of all sorts to me. Because the anthem is just the most important thing in the whole universe right now, right? According to our president, he made a big, big deal out of it. So while I wouldn't normally make a big deal out of, I mean, I've seen singers mess up the national anthem.
Oh yeah,
all it's have. Funny. If anything, we chuckle, or sometimes we make fun of him and we move on. But here is a guy that's campaigned, his whole campaign practically now is based on this one thing. So to me, that's just kind of funny. If you know, and I don't know, you got to be able to play the game if you're gonna. Yeah.
And in the end, he lost that battle because the players got the money.
That too, yeah. Mine's a quick one. I wanted to just bring light to this because it wasn't a huge story. Because for once, someone did something with no ulterior motive, and it didn't really make a big splash in the news outlets. So I'm bringing the attention to it. Kanye West, simple story. He heard about one of his fans that is basically dying from cancer, and like down to the last few days or what have you. And so he wasn't able to get there, wherever she was, but he did call her and rap for her over the phone. Didn't call the news, didn't call cameras. They just called the girl and rapped for her over the phone, had a little conversation in that. And I believe Kim Kardashian might have jumped on too. And they said that, he made her last few days of life pretty good.
Wow.
And then she passed away, unfortunately. This is all just recently.
That is dope.
Last week. But yeah, just because news is always negative about him and these kind of things. So.
Well, he deserves it.
Yeah, he does. But, we should also shed light on these cool things that happen.
That is cool. That right there for you to seek that out and to proceed like he did. I mean, a stranger. That is. He gets credit. He's got dope.
And not
for that.
Ask for the camera, carnival cameras.
I thought this was pretty dope. On the field last night. Do you recall the best day of your life?
Wow. There's plenty of them.
I can recall my worst. My best birthday, my best Christmas, but not the best day of my life. But after the game last night, ESPN is on the field with Nick Saban. Give a listen.
I'll tell you what, the resiliency of our team to come back in the second half. Tua did a great job, gave us a little spark. Defense picked it up. To overcome the adversity of missing the field goal in regular and then go and win the game in overtime. It's a great football game. You got to give Georgia a lot of credit. They really played well in the game. And I'm so proud of our players for the way they come back in the game after the first half we played was not very good.
What led to the decision and what did you tell Tua?
Well, I just thought we had to throw the ball in the game and I thought he could do it better. And he did. He did a good job. We made some plays in the passing game. So, hey, it's just a great win, man. I'm so happy for Alabama fans. Great for our players. Unbelievable. This was a great win for our players, and I've never been happier in my life.
Never.
Never.
Congratulations, Nick.
Happiest day of my life, said Nick Saban. Wow. You got four other titles. You're married. You got children. You got grandkids, I believe. That is remarkable. But I understand it. This was not his best team. Last year was his best team, and they lost to Clemson on the final play of the game. So for this to be a comeback measure, and for him to say this is the happiest day of my life, God bless you, Nick. That is dope, my friends. Lighters down. Ed Graney's next. He's up in Oakland. You're on Game On.
Now back to Game On with Seat Williams.
About your understanding and love of Raiders Nation. Can you talk about the team's plans to move to Las Vegas and how you feel about that?
Well, Mark can talk about the move to Las Vegas. I'm a real short-term, goal-oriented coach. Big reason I'm here is my passion for the city of Oakland and this franchise. And the people in the black hole, if you're out there listening, I can't wait to see you guys, man. I really can't. And I'd like to fill that place with Raider fans at least 7 or 8 more times. That's all I care about right now.
344 in the Valley. Talk about winning over a crowd in a city. Yeah, I'm up in Oaktown. Vegas, talk to Mark Davis. I'm in Oaktown. Yeah, that's John Gruden who gets it. Let's go up north now. Ed Graney of the Review Journal, also of the Press Box on ESPN 1100, 109 FM from 11 to 2. Eddie, how are you, bro?
What's up, buddy? How are you, Seat?
Doing great. Hey, let's go back to that question. Were there any other Vegas questions that came about? And if so, how do you handle them?
No, actually, you know, there wasn't many. Some people mentioned Vegas during their questions, but not specifically to Vegas. And I thought he handled that question great. I mean, I think after the year they had 6-10, when they expected to go to the playoffs, maybe the Super Bowl, given their leaving in 2 years, I think there was a fear around the organization that they were really going to start losing some people every Sunday. Well, this guy, I think, changes that, and he understands that. And I think he answered that question great. He's here for the next 2 years, and he wants to bring them a championship before they leave. So I thought that was the appropriate answer to that question. He shouldn't be talking about Vegas. Now, he'll talk about Vegas when they get there. But right now, they need to fill a stadium for another 2 years before they head to Southern Nevada.
That was a beautiful way to answer the question, I have to admit. I mean, yeah. Hey, look, I'm a Raider coach. We could be playing in Blythe, California. I don't care. I just want to coach the silver and black. Give us a scene setter, Eddie.
It was amazing. You know, we flew up here this morning, landed at 7:30. We probably got to the complex around, I want to say, like maybe 9, and already several media had lined up with their tripods and their cameras. They credentialed over 150 media just for a press conference for a coach. Over 50 former Raiders were here. They said it was going to be splashy, and it was. They had that video montage to start it off with the music. Mark Davis became pretty emotional talking about Gruden's family and bringing him back, so... one thing I've noticed about the Raiders, you know, we didn't know much about them before. You know, they went for relocation, and we've been up here all the time. But when they do things really professional and really well. It was a really well-done press conference. And I thought Gruden, again, you know, he's got to prove he can coach now and come back after so many years. And we all know after that Super Bowl in Tampa, things didn't really go well for him as a coach. But in terms of today, I agree with you. He answered everything, I thought, brilliantly. And I thought they hit it out of the park. Now we'll go see if he can coach and if he can win.
Yeah, well, we know that he's done nothing but football. I mean, you could tell when even the game that he was doing the other night, he's doing the football game, the playoff game, his last one, and he's in the head of every coach and every player on the field. You know, when you're watching him from upstairs, that's why the coordinators or the connection to the coordinators are up in the box, in the booths, because you can see the field better than you can. When you're on the field, you can't see what's going on. You really can't. You know that,
no,
Eddie.
I agree with you. I mean, history has said if you win a Super Bowl, those who come back, you know, don't do it again. We'll see. I mean, Dick Vermeil went to a Super Bowl, went away, came back, and won a Super Bowl. But we know the stories of Gibbs and Ditka and those other guys who just couldn't do it again. I don't know if that's going to happen. I think, look, if John Gruden was the most important person here today, the second most, or maybe 1A, was Derek Carr. Because he's about to, as Rich Gannon told us, inherit a coach who is up at 3 a.m. every morning and will expect the same from Derek Carr. Maybe not 3 a.m., but he will expect the intensity and the passion and the energy and the work ethic. And, you know, Rich Gannon said, I don't care how much Derek has worked in the past. He's about to work harder than he ever has in his life to fit in. So if Derek Carr can embrace what he's about to get at a coach, I think obviously John Gruden also inherited the best coach, or excuse me, the best quarterback he's ever had as a head coach. Now, he coached Randall Cunningham and Brett Favre, but that was as an assistant. As a head coach, he's never had anyone as good as Derek Carr. So if these guys can get together and match work ethic and mesh, I think they could be pretty good pretty fast.
Ed Graney of the Review Journal up in Oakland, also the Press Box, ESPN 1100, 109 FM, 11 to 2 weekdays here in Lotus Broadcasting. Okay, Del Rio, they replace him. Gruden comes back. We saw problems with the quarterback situation because of injury. What else is wrong with the Raiders, especially their offense?
Well, he's going to have to make a decision on Crabtree. He's going to have to make a decision on Marshawn Lynch. You know, I was surprised. They said, I've never met Marshawn Lynch. He goes, every time we had a game with these guys, I asked the PR people, and he never showed up. but he also said he loved Marshawn Lynch because Marshawn Lynch came back to Oakland for the same reason he did, because he loves Oakland and he loves the Raiders. You know, I mean, I think the offensive line, if they get back healthy and everything with Penn and everyone is set, he has a defense to build around Khalil Mack. Those two rookies, Melifonu and Conley, you know, they barely played this year because of injuries. So I think he's got to get the offense set. You know, do you want Marshawn back? What do you do with Crabtree owed all that money? Who are your receivers? That's what he has to look at. And the other story up here again was today, you know, Reggie McKenzie. Who's really in charge? What people forget is John Gruden and Reggie McKenzie were both with the Packers as young guys under Ron Wolf and Mike Holmgren. They saw how a very powerful coach worked with a GM, and they said that that's going to happen here. And Reggie said afterwards, I can't wait to meet, you know, work with him. We've been together in Green Bay. We know each other, and we will decide together on players. So, you know, whether that's true or not, we'll see. When the doors close, you don't really know. But that's how they're spinning it up here, that Reggie McKenzie and John Gruden will work together in terms of drafting and players and personnel.
Raider Nation, were there fans outside the complex where you were at? Kind of describe what was going on around there.
Were they? I'm standing out the complex right now, and those lunatics are still on the side of the street. I don't even think there's anyone left but media, and they're still out there with their signs, walking back Chucky and Super Bowl bound. And yeah, I mean, it was 9 o'clock in the morning, seat, and they were lined up down the street, and they are really excited about this guy coming back. And you got to give them some credit. Look, their team's about to leave. You know, they're gone in 2 years, and yet they're still here. They're still excited. They're still fired up about what they think this guy can bring. And, again, we'll see if he can bring it. I really like the guy. I think he's a decent coach. But you can't ignore the fact that after he went to the Super Bowl and won it, for the next 6 years, they only made the playoffs twice, missed it four, and he lost both times when they get to the playoffs. So, he said that today, too. He said, I have a ton to prove to people. He has a lot to prove if he can be a really, really good coach over time. So, but in terms of the Raider Nation, what you're talking about, I'm watching some lunatic right now dressed as a pirate walking up and down the street. Anywhere else in America, he'd be arrested, but here he's normal. So, yeah, they're fired up, needless to say.
Oh, man. Okay,
they're completely crazy.
Yeah.
It's just absolutely amazing. But you know what? Good for them. I hope it's this way in Vegas. I hope people in Vegas can adopt a team like they have up here, because these people love this team no matter what. They're absolutely crazy for this team.
And it's weird because we had St. Louis leave a couple of years ago, moved to L.A. for the Rams, right?
Yeah.
We didn't hear much about a ruckus or anything going on. The way the Chargers left on a Wednesday out of the blue, no one saw it coming. And the city just basically, they hate the hell out of the Spanos. But the Raider Nation fans are still engaging. Kind of explain, in your opinion, why things are different in Oakland as opposed to San Diego.
Because I think they have an affinity for the team more than their hatred for the owner. I mean, I don't think they're happy with Mark Davis here. He's about to take their team. But I think they have an affinity for the team. And like I said, Seton, you know this. You know the Raiders. 50 ex-Raiders showed up today. Tim Brown, Howie Long, Hayes, Gannon, they were all here. I don't know if other teams are like that. Every time there's something big that I cover up here, there's always other Raiders around. And Gruden pointed them all out today and said, I want every one of you guys to know this door is always open. I want you here all the time. I never got that when I covered the Chargers, kind of the sense of that kind of passion from the fans about players because they're so loyal. It's not a rip against the Chargers. I just think it's really unique up here about how they respond to the plays. And Gruden said, you know, I heard in your clip that you played, he said, you know, tell the people the black hole. I can't wait to see them. And I think he really means it. I think he loves Oakland and what he remembers as the coach here. And, you know, he said, look, I was 34 and had to coach for Al Davis. I know what pressure means. He goes, so I don't really feel pressure. He goes, but I know I have a bullseye on my chest, and if people want to come at me, come at me. I have a lot to prove.
And what you said about the former players, the thing about Al Davis made everyone, no matter if it was just a cup of coffee, if you wore the silver and black, he made you part of the family for the eternity, for the rest of your life.
Yeah, and I think his son, and I don't know if his son is consciously trying to right the wrongs of his dad. I mean, we both know that things went bad with Gruden, and he traded Gruden to Tampa Bay, and Mark always said, I wanted him back. But I think Mark, there's a few things, this and other things, where he's trying to make things in his own mind right and perhaps maybe improve his dad's legacy while doing so. I think this is a big move today to bring a guy back who never wanted to leave here. John Gruden never wanted to leave, but he was traded away by Al, and now the son has worked years and years to get him back. So, you know, props to Mark Davis for that. And I think there's a few other things he's done that he's trying to help his dad's legacy along by kind of righting some wrongs.
I like it. Listen, you enjoy yourself up there. Be careful, man. You got pirates on the street. Don't tell them what they're packing. So,
well, not on purpose, certainly, obviously, because you know the unbiased in me. But not on purpose. But Greenspan packed me a silver and black tie for some reason today. So maybe if they see the silver and black tie, they'll think I'm one of them and they won't kill me.
There you go. You got to wear a hoodie, too. Now, by the way, it's raining here again. So welcome back when you get back.
It rained here also.
And they're still out.
And we're out. They're still out. They're still on the street.
In the rain.
Some nutcase is carrying around what appears to be a spear. So I guess if I'm attacked, I'll like show that guy my tie, and maybe he'll come protect me.
Nice. All right, brother. All right, buddy. Safe. We'll see you on the radio, huh?
I'll see you. Bye.
You got it. Ed Graney, Press Box, 11 to 2 o'clock, ESPN 1100, 109 FM. Also, the Review Journal, their lead sports guy. That'll wrap it up. Thanks to Eddie. Let's do the giveaway right now. Caller number 5, Rebels San Diego State, the 27th. 702-365-9200, 365-9200. You got the pair of tickets. Caller number uno, dos, tres, cuatro, cinco. I think I got it right.
You did.
Ari, thank you, brother. I'm Seed Williams. Folk, Chinstuck, Logart's up high. We'll see you on the radio. More of the show tomorrow. NBC Sports Radio 920. Game on. Game over.